Hello, welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One. To whom it may concern, thank you for listening to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Will, and as always, I'm joined by Ben Stevens, the editor of the Grand Prix 24/7 website. Ben, how did you enjoy, by Russian Grand Prix standards, what was a fairly entertaining race?
Well, yeah, first, hi, Will. Good to be talking to you. Yeah, it's an interesting one, wasn't it? Valtteri getting the win, this long-awaited win that he clearly so desired. He certainly was quite emotional, in a way, on team radio afterwards. You can tell how much it sort of meant to him. Whether this changes anything in the long run, I sincerely doubt. And you do have to take your hat off to him, because he did drive a very solid, composed race and, got the job done.
Yeah, I think winning a Grand Prix at any point and in any car is always a challenge and takes a certain amount of focus and skill, of course. But I think this was in the category of kind of easy victories for Bottas once Hamilton's penalty was administered, and obviously the kind of strategy ramifications that had as well, because of, you know, the concern about passing in Russia. And, you know, we had some pretty quick cars in the shape of Ricciardo, Ocon and Perez, who could have caused Hamilton some issues had, you know, he been looking to stretch out that first stint. So, yeah, a pretty easy win for Bottas. But I think on the whole, it wasn't all kind of promising as a weekend for the Finn. Obviously, we have the situation in qualifying, incredibly dramatic Q2, probably the most dramatic of the season, where it looked like Hamilton wasn't actually going to make it through, because firstly, he had a lap deleted for running wide on the final corner. Then Vettel put it in the wall, signaled a red flag, and it meant that Hamilton only had two minutes 15 to get round and then complete a flying lap. They chose to put him on the mediums, rather than the mediums, which he used in the first part of the session, but not managed to set a time with. And then he was behind quite a few cars in the queue and only just made it to set a time. So, Ben, obviously, you know, cutting it pretty fine for Lewis, but he kind of just about got there in the end.
Yeah, that was high drama. You don't expect that in Q2, but that's what we got. Because he couldn't have cut that close if he tried. I think the margin was 1.25 seconds, if my memory is correct. And the fact that, as I'm sure a lot of you out there have seen the onboards, he's storming through the field. He passes two cars to get to the final corner, and then he slows down. And, you know, he's trying to create the gap. And then his engineer comes over like, go, go, go. You know, that could have gone very bad. He was very fortunate to get through there, but also at the same time, like, it was a credit to him, because he did have to push and manage to do it on cold tyres. Although, ironically, in the end, the result probably would have been the same had he not got through, because he didn't win the race either way.
Yeah, but I suppose what it did allow us to see was an interesting Q3, and, you know, this is supposedly one of Bottas' stronger tracks, and he was blown out of the water by Hamilton in Q3 by, you know, more than half a second, beaten as well by Max Verstappen. You know, it's strange to reflect on after a win for Bottas, but, you know, one of his worst qualifying performances of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, this is the thing when you're talking about Lewis versus any of his teammates, really, is like, it's tough to say how much has this been the other driver, in this case, Valtteri Bottas, obviously, been, underperforming, and how much is this Lewis just sort of being Lewis. Either way, it doesn't look good for Valtteri, that's for sure. And I don't think anyone would, sort of make the mistake of saying, well, Valtteri was the fastest driver this weekend, because he simply wasn't. I think regardless of what happened yesterday, what happened on Saturday sort of proves that, like, Lewis, with this particular Mercedes in 2020, has just found, you know, another level of comfort with the car. And even on a track where, historically, he definitely struggled is the wrong word because he's won four out of the six races there, but he's also had some really rough weekends. And I think one of those, or both of those, might have came with Valtteri alongside him. To see him sort of overcome those past difficulties and smash it like we would expect, you know, I don't know, at a track that, you know, much more suits his style, like Silverstone, for example. We kind of expect that margin there, but we don't expect it here. That just tells me that he really, really has found his comfort level with the car. And, you know, as much as Valtteri goes on and wins, the race on Sunday, it sort of proves that it takes something completely unexpected, completely out of the ordinary, something you can't count on for Lewis to sort of lose his spot as the fastest driver in F1 currently.
Yeah, and I think that just picking out some other interesting aspects from this qualifying session, obviously we have a situation with Max Verstappen beating Bottas. It's clear that while I don't think the power mode, party mode situation has caused a dramatic difference in who's putting it on pole, there is a smaller margin. And, you know, Verstappen's only kind of half a second behind Lewis now rather than the kind of full second. So, you know, good performance from him to put it second on the grid. You know, he's been outstanding all season, to be honest. He's barely put a foot wrong, has Verstappen, you know, and given a few fewer car failures, he would be probably ahead of Bottas. So yeah, I've been really, really impressed with Max all year. As we always are. He's a quality driver. And then the other two probably that mentioned worth mentioning are Sergio Perez without the upgrades that were put on Lance Stroll's car to put it in P4. That's a really great performance from him as well. You know, I don't think he's actually had a brilliant season compared to his usually quite high standards. But this was probably his first really outstanding qualifying performance of the season, I'd say. And the other is Daniel Ricciardo, who just seems to be one of the most consistent drivers on the grid right now. He's getting absolutely everything out of that Renault. And, I thought Ocon would prove a tricky opponent, but Ricciardo's really put in the shade.
Yeah, I mean, you really tear me up there, Will, to toot the horn of my fellow Aussie. So I appreciate that, mate. Because he's just been on another level, and he's proving why he is considered, you know, one of the four best drivers on the grid. I think you'd say at this point, maybe third best behind Verstappen and Hamilton. He's just driving fantastically well. And then for the same with Perez there, that was a great performance. And to be fair, he's been, at least in qualifying, he's been a step above where he was previous to his layoff since coming back. I think, this was the fifth, he's now had five, I think he's gone 5-0 in the race since he's come back from his COVID-19 quarantine on Saturdays against Lance Stroll. Although, to be fair, that was quite easy yesterday because, for whatever reason, Lance really struggled. He's proving, like, absolutely, he deserves to stay on the grid. Not that anyone was really saying he didn't. But I think, you know, if you're looking at, if you're Haas, if you're, I don't know, even maybe Alfa Romeo, but especially Haas, I don't see why you wouldn't snap him up with the way he's sort of extracting pace from that car.
Yeah. Racing Point's been a difficult one to judge all season because I don't think any of us, well, I think he's proven to a certain extent that he definitely deserves his place on the grid this year, has Stroll. I don't think either of us think that he's kind of getting the absolute maximum out of that car. And that's why it's been surprising to see Perez struggling too, because Perez is a driver who is held in very high regard by a number of fans. So that was good. I think he needs to do that a bit more often. And I mean, as much as he's been beating Stroll regularly in qualifying this season, his race craft, which is what you usually associate with Perez as being really strong, hasn't been brilliant. And his starts especially has been quite weak. So, you know, I'm sure there are teams looking at him, of course. Like, why would you not take Perez when you've got, you know, for example, Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen as your driver pairing? But I definitely think that that won't have done him any harm, because this has not been a vintage Perez season as of yet. Anyway, should we move on to the race? Obviously, the kind of, I guess the drama all comes before we've even started, with Hamilton picking up 2 5-second penalties for doing practice starts outside kind of the area that he's allowed to. He wasn't very happy about this, and he was initially given an additional 2 penalty points on his super license, but they have since been taken off. From what I can tell, the way this has been handled hasn't been ideal. I think that what he did looks to have been kind of clearly outlawed, and the penalties were deserving. But what do you make of this? All this confusion, Hamilton and Mercedes clearly not being very happy, and then, you know, the decision to give him penalty points, but then rescind them. You know, it's a bit of a mess.
Yeah, it is. Although, to be fair, I think it might be better to frame it in terms of Mercedes and Lewis specifically. As much as they didn't like what happened to them on Sunday with the penalty, I think their sort of reaction to it is more a reflection of this season-long sort of what they feel is, you know, slightly unfair treatment. Obviously, the engine mode thing is quite directly targeted at them. And, you know, for Lewis and Mercedes, it sort of feels like, you know, they're trying to cut their legs out from under them. And in a way, you know, I guess, well, the engine mode, that is what they tried to do. Not necessarily bring them all the way back to the pack, but at least, you know, pull them back a little bit. And so when you sort of have things like a practice start penalty, which ultimately didn't hurt anybody, you know, it didn't, it had no sort of effect on the race. It didn't help, you know, didn't give him an advantage at the start. Everyone else did practice starts. It's just he chose to do it in different places. You know, you're sort of like, well, just come on, you know, if you're Mercedes, like, come on, let this slide. So I can sort of understand their dissatisfaction, but yeah, I think it's stemming from a wider sort of season-long issue with Michael Massey and co. And then in terms of the actual decision to give the penalty points, well, I think, to be fair, that's, I mean, and this is sort of comes back to the sort of very strange way that F1 officiating works, where you've got the stewards who are completely, during the race at least, they're separate of Michael Massey in race control, and they've decided at the time he gets penalty points for, you know, for his penalties. And then after the race, Massey says, well, no, that's not really fair, because, you know, this is the team deciding, telling him to do this, and not him sort of doing this of his own volition. So I think it's definitely the right call to retract the penalties, but obviously that doesn't sort of alleviate the tensions when you have to sort of correct what can be perceived as a mistake. Whether it is or not, I'm not sure. It's not necessarily a mistake if the stewards are interpreting, you know, the rules in one way and just think, well, we gave this rule and we have to give the penalty points. I'm not sure. But yeah, it definitely doesn't help sort of ease the tensions, does it?
No, I think that, and this is something that I've written in my driver ratings this morning, but Hamilton looks as it like he's been so dominant in the car this season, and it's just these kind of weird, silly little mistakes that are even kind of giving Bottas an even slightly, like, tiny chance. You look back at, you know, entering the pit lane when it was closed in Monza, and then this mistake today, you know, that's costing him potentially, you know, another 25 points, potentially 2 other wins. And it's just, it's pretty uncharacteristic for Mercedes, who seem to be kind of always on this kind of stuff. So it's an interesting one to watch, and I'm sure Hamilton and the team will be really wary of making another silly error, because, you know, it's leaving, and I don't, you know, for the record, I don't think Bottas is going to suddenly start going on a roll and catching him, but what it's doing is just putting Hamilton at an unnecessary amount of risk, when this season should be about him breaking all the records and equaling Schumacher's 7th title, and I think he'll be frustrated to have let points slip in such silly fashion this weekend. So, looking away from Lewis, I think it's important to look at Bottas and his mindset at the end of the race. Obviously, after sealing the win, he gave out his signature, to whom it may concern, fuck you. Ben, what do you make of his, I don't know, let's go with fiery approach to his critics?
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange one. And this is something I'm sort of exploring in my day after piece that I'm probably going to put up. It'll be up, probably up by the time, if you're hearing this, it'll be up on the website. You can check it out. Because, yeah, I mean, if you look at the first time we did it, which was 2019 Aussie Grand Prix. So that was coming in off a 2018 season where Lewis had won 11 races. Obviously, the championship. Valtteri had won none. There was a lot of criticism, rightly so, saying, well, if you can't win a single race in this car, maybe you don't deserve to be there. To be fair, there were a few races in that season where he was a bit unlucky, Russia in particular. But then this time, I think it's not quite... I don't think people are sort of on the sort of same page. It's more sort of the reaction is, huh, when he said that. Because the race that everyone was watching, while he didn't, you know, he didn't necessarily not deserve to win it, he also was very fortunate with the Hamilton penalty to win it. Not to sort of not be cognizant of that seems strange. Because if you were, you don't think, you think you'd be aware that then this isn't really answering your critics, because they've got a quite obvious sort of counter to say, well, you run this on merit. No, you didn't. You had this penalty, which did undeniably advantage you. And then on top of that, it's not the start of the season as it was in 2019 in Melbourne. It's 10 races into the season, and the writing is clearly on the wall. We know that Lewis is going to win this year. It's inevitable, like Thanos. It's just a matter of time. So who is he really... You know, he can say fuck you to the critics, but he's not really shutting them up, because everything we've seen so far, both in the race and in this season, points to a very different picture than the one he seems to have in his head.
Yeah, I can only, you know, empathize with him in terms of the amount of stress and pressure and criticism that he must face, you know, as a professional sportsman and as a driver in one of the best teams in Formula One. But yeah, it was pretty bizarre. But let's look a little bit further down the grid. I think one driver who potentially had a bit of luck at the start but kind of made it work was Charles Leclerc. Obviously, yeah, that Ferrari this season, it is worth probably just not mentioning, because they are struggling so much and more than I can ever remember. And, you know, Leclerc has always been the driver to get the most out of it when there has been something to get out of it. And, you know, P6 finish is certainly commendable. But should he ever have been able to be in that position after what happened with Lance Stroll on the opening lap? What's your take on that incident?
Yeah, well, this is the sort of story that's been going on social media in just the last few hours, actually, is people comparing what he did to Stroll to what I think Hamilton did to Alex Albon back in Austria, I believe. And just, yeah, the sort of the fact that he got away with that. And I can understand that things are sort of, there's a bit more of a live and let live mentality with, you know, the stewarding on first lap incidents, which is what yesterday's was. But at the same time, it was quite clearly Leclerc's fault. You know, he didn't have to put his car there. So, yeah, I think if he had been given a penalty, very few people could have disagreed with it. So, yeah, he was very fortunate in that respect. And then it sort of comes back to the whole Mercedes thing. And while I don't believe this, there's always going to be people saying Ferrari International Assistance. And when you have sort of instances like this where their number one rival, or even though they're not really competing right now, is getting penalized, they're not, you know, that also sort of further fans the flames.
I think you're right in your first point in that. I think that first lap incidents are just generally kind of put in the box of, you know, there is 20 cars within a 50 meter space, like, things are going to happen and there's not much you can do about it. And in general, I think that's probably the best way to do it. Although I do think this was getting closer to, you know, they'd gone through the first corner second corner, as it is in Russia. And I do think that we're probably far enough into the lap that, you know, what Charles did was avoidable. It wasn't just a result of it being lap one. But, you know, he got away with it, and I think it was a good drive nonetheless. Ricardo as well, I guess on the flip side, he did pick up a penalty in what was a very bizarre incident with Esteban Ocon, where he was allowed through, but then didn't seem ready, locked up, cut the corner and picked up a 5-second penalty. Obviously, it didn't matter in the end, but that was a very weird one.
A very strange one, yeah. I would assume that came from some sort of late call from the pits to make the swap. Either that or there was just some sort of, strange move by Ocon. I don't want to sort of go as far as saying, well, that was Ocon's way of sort of being a sore loser about it and making it difficult to make the pass, and in the end it was too difficult. I don't want to go that far, because it just seemed incompetent more than everything from Renault all around, and it was sort of... It was fortunate that it didn't end up costing him in the end, and it was great to sort of see him get the penalty and just be like, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to go faster then. That's what you want to hear from an F1 driver. But yeah, you would, and if this team has championship aspirations, those are the sort of things you simply can't do, because if that's for the lead instead of for fifth and sixth or whatever the positions were then, well, then it's a much bigger story. And yeah, it's something they've definitely make sure it doesn't happen again.
I thought it was pretty pointed from Ocon as well, in the way that he slowed down. He was leaving no one in any doubt about the fact that he was letting Ricardo pass rather than the fact that Ricardo was passing him. Yeah, he almost stopped on track, didn't he? Which I thought was interesting. But, Ricardo had better pace than him all race. So I think that... It made sense to make that move. And just rounding out the points, I think we had some great action between Gasly, Norris, Albon, and at the start of the race, Russell. And also should probably give some credit to Daniel Kvyat, because I think he drove a good race and made that hard to medium strategy work really well.
Yeah, absolutely. He at a time when everyone's singing the praises of his teammate, to answer the sort of, the call, as it were, even though it doesn't ultimately, I don't think, changes anything in terms of where people view the pecking order at the team. But yeah, it's a great performance, and he needs it at a time where AlphaTauri is probably considering whether they want to continue with him in the future. So to make that strategy work the way he did, he was the best of the drivers that started on the medium tyre. The hard tyre. Yeah, that's a very impressive performance, and it was a great little scrap that those guys had there. It was a shame for Norris in particular that he couldn't make that lap one stop work, and eventually had to drop back to 15th. Ended up being a bit of a tough day for him, but I guess that's how F1 goes sometimes.
Yeah, and just before we move on to our inevitably incorrect predictions, I think we should just have a quick eye on the Formula 2. Results, because I think that gives a very interesting insight into your comments just then about Daniel Kvyat. So obviously we have Yuki Tsunoda, who he finished second in the feature race, and then Mick Schumacher finishing first in the feature race as well. So the pressure on the likes of Giovinazzi and Kvyat is only mounting, because we have candidates who look like they're going to be earning a super license and could be coming into F1 next year. So I think that adds a really interesting layer to the final races of the season for people who aren't necessarily fighting for wins or even points, but just to, show their teams that they've got something about them, so that, they deserve another go, because, we've got a lot of young, talented drivers in the lower formula who will be very eager to come and take their spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially considering it's not just the performance of these F2 drivers who, have been pretty impressive, but also it's the sort of the financial implications of them getting F1 seats, because obviously Mick Schumacher is Mick Schumacher. That's huge. And it would take something absolutely massive from Giovinazzi for Alfa Romeo to not want to sort of capitalize on the marketing opportunities of bringing a Schumacher back to F1. And then you've got Tsunoda, who's backed by Honda, and assuming that Honda-Red Bull relationship is not completely going down the drain. I don't think it is. They're going to be pushing pretty hard for him to be in that car next year. And it would seem, regardless of what happens between Albon as well as Kvyat and Gasly, that Kvyat would be the odd man out there to make way for Tsunoda. So, yeah, for them, they're simply... And this isn't the first time for Kvyat, obviously, but yeah, they're driving for their F1 careers.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that that will really add some spice to the end of the season too, because, you know, there are 4, 5, 6 drivers even who could be, you know, in trouble. If you look at, in addition to Giovinazzi and Kvyat, we've also got potentially Magnussen, Grosjean and Kimi Raikkonen. It's definitely going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on.
Well, anyway, thank you very much for listening. As always, you can read all of our work on GrandPrix247.com or follow us on Twitter at GrandPrix247. We'll be back next week previewing the Eifel Grand Prix at the Nürburgring and having a look at all the other big news stories in the world of Formula One. Thanks for listening.